If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we're joined by a young rider whose career is on an upward trajectory in every sense. Now, followers of the under-23 scene, desperate to spot the new Tadej Pogačar or Tom Pidcock, will already be familiar with the name Oscar Onley. This autumn, however, he burst into the consciousness of fans of the professional sport with superb rides at the Brother UK-sponsored Tour of Britain and at the Crow Race, where only Tour de France winner Jonas Vingegaard could keep him from winning stages 3 and 5. It says much for Oscar's talent that he races both for Team DSM's development and World Tour teams. If you look closely at his brilliant 2022 campaign, you'll find victories in the most prestigious under-23 races, as well as podium finishes at professional races with world-class fields. After his wheel-to-wheel battles in Croatia with the reigning Tour de France champion, for example, Oscar finished his season at Paris Tour Espoir. He is at once a young man in a hurry and a wise head on young shoulders. A GC rider, a more than useful time trialist, and a formidable climber, able to make the difference on the steepest finishes, Oscar is a hugely exciting prospect and so, naturally, a protege of the Dave Rayner Foundation, a charitable organisation with an unerring eye for talent. Oscar will be among the Foundation's many guests at its annual charity dinner and auction in Leeds on Saturday, November the 12th. Oscar, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thanks. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you making the time here, Oscar. I mean, it's been an unbelievable season and, as I say, really notable for this mix of professional races and the very highest quality under-23 races. It's a pretty unique pathway. Let's go right back to the beginning. When did you start cycling? How did the sport enter your life?
Yeah, so I started when I was 10 years old. The local club, their time trials started, you know, almost outside my house. Yeah, I'd watch them going past on their TT bikes and hearing the disc wheels and stuff. So when I was 10, then I was old enough to do them. So yeah, I started there and then it kind of progressed to youth races in Scotland. Yeah, as an under 12 and then under 14. And then started going to the national series around Britain. And then as a junior, going abroad with Spokes more often, yeah.
And that very first glimpse of cycling, what was it that grabbed your attention? Was it the beautiful bikes? Was it the sheer speed? What was it that made you think, yeah, I want to be part of that?
My mum used to always watch the tour on TV every year. Even before I started cycling, that was like the one race she would watch. My first memories are Contador and Andy Schleck going against each other in the mountains. And I think, yeah, that's where it kind of first started, thinking, ah, that'd be quite a cool thing to do. I just remember Contador in the yellow jersey and Schleck in the white jersey, just attacking each other constantly.
2010, I think. What an amazing tour that was. And what an incredible coincidence that you're watching the tour on telly and my goodness, there's a time trial starting outside your house. I mean, that's just unreal. Very interesting to hear you talk there about all the different influences in your career to date with Scottish cycling, Spokes, with racing national events in the UK, and then, as we'll discuss later, racing abroad. You know, Brother UK's sponsorship assets lie in British domestic road racing. And I just wondered what role that scene had played in your development.
The races in Britain are a huge part of my development. I think I can only really comment from the youth side and junior side because I haven't done so many races since then. But I think if you look at the level that we're in the youth and junior races, probably harder than most UCI races, I think. Yeah, if you looked at the results in UCI races, top 10 was always full of Brits. And I think that shows how high the level was in Britain at the time. And obviously, yeah, with Spokes and Scottish Cycling, they gave me the first steps to going abroad then and doing these UCI races and making that next step.
And tell us specifically about the involvement of Scottish Cycling, that first wave of British talent that made it all the way, you know, Mark Cavendish, Geraint Thomas, famously came through the British Cycling Academy. More recently, some of the more successful British riders have taken different routes. You know, you think about a guy like Jake Stewart, for example, who began his career on the Academy and then moved to FDJ and achieved his dream that way. Tell me about the role your national federation has played in getting you ultimately to where you need to be.
Yeah, I think the Scottish Cycling Programme is kind of modelled around the British Cycling Programme. Obviously, we stay at home, we don't stay in a certain, like in Glasgow or anything, but it's the same kind of idea, mixing track and road. But I was quite clear from the beginning that I just wanted to focus on the road. I enjoyed the track for training and a bit of racing, but I always knew that, yeah, I had a lot more potential on the road. So that was a pathway we both went down. I think that was kind of the aim from the beginning.
And they took you to France, I think. There was a healthy overseas program with Scottish Cycling.
We went over to France for 2 weeks. Yeah, I could say that was where it first really opened my eyes to what I could do in Europe. I got my first kind of bigger results in races. And then, yeah, I got in contact with a few teams after that. Really key trip in my development, I think.
Was the federation supportive on the administrative side, if that makes any sense? You know, reaching out to professional teams with development squads, that kind of thing? Or was that done, you know, solely on your own initiative?
Well, to begin with, it was actually really easy because I got in contact with AG2R under-19 team, and that came from a race I was doing in France. It was between myself and one of their riders for the white jersey. And then, yeah, we just started talking naturally after the race. And they said they had a free spot in a couple of weeks' time in a race and invited me along if I wanted to join. So then, yeah, I went to that race. And then from there, just progressed and I ended up joining the Azure Desert team for the year after.
It's amazing how easy it is to overlook the fact that you've been at school while this incredible career has unfolded. How tricky was that to manage, study and sport?
In the end, it didn't really go to plan because of COVID and stuff. And I was a second year junior when COVID started. So I actually didn't get to race and I didn't get to finish school properly. So yeah, it was kind of a weird ending to it all. And maybe I could have focused a bit more on school, but I got through.
I was going to ask actually about the maturity that, you know, you've shown. You don't seem to be in any great hurry to get to the World Tour team exclusively. You're happy to continue with a mix of under 23 and professional racing. You know, that is really striking. Naturally, of course, a young rider wants to get to the top as quickly as they possibly can. You've brought a lot of focus to your career. Is that a trait that we would find in other areas of your life? Were you a particularly focused student, for example, or is it cycling really that provides that drive?
It's more cycling, I would say. I think, yeah, if there's something I'm really focused on and I want to do well, then I am really driven and dedicated. But I wouldn't say I'm so dedicated at everything I do. Yeah, I have to have a passion for it.
You know, drilling down into the root of that passion for cycling, where does that come from? Is it the competitive aspect? Do you want to prove yourself? Or is it, you know, the freedom aspect, the joy of being out on the bike?
I would say actually it's more to do with just being on the bike. In some ways, I actually prefer the training to racing. When I was a bit younger, I also did a lot of running, cross-country running. And at the time, I was results-wise, I was a lot better at running. But I chose cycling just because I enjoyed going out on the bike. And whenever I had to train running, then I preferred to do it on the bike. And so that kind of decided that, yeah, cycling was the sport to go with.
And what are the roads like in your part of the world? You're in the borders, I think.
Yeah, they're really nice. I think we don't have any big climbs, kind of 5 to 10 minutes. I think the most important factor is that the roads are really quiet. On a Sunday morning or something, I could do 4 hours without seeing more than 10 cars, I think, if I really tried.
Well, that's amazing. And of course, the Tour of Britain was in your neck of the woods this year, wasn't it? How did that feel?
Yeah, that was a really special day for my family to watch it as well, because they don't see me race so much anymore. And it went past my house. Yeah, they all saw it there. And then going through Kelso, my hometown, there were so many people out. I wasn't expecting it to be like that. Yeah, it was a really special day.
I think any cycling fan would probably be looking to buy a property on the road where you live, Oscar. I mean, you've got time trials, you've got the Tour of Britain. Seems to be a bit of a cycling hotspot. You mentioned that in the borders, the greatest climbs are still only, you know, sort of 5 to 10 minutes long. Was it on foreign roads that you really understood for the first time that your climbing prowess could shape the outcome of a race?
In my head, I always thought I'd be a climber just because I was quite small. But yeah, I never really had any big climbs to prove myself on in Britain. But then that first trip I took with Scottish Cycling out to France, we did Valromi Tour, kind of near Chambéry, actually, and there's some big climbs there. And that kind of that was the first sign that I proved to myself that I could keep up with the top guys on the climbs there.
Azure Desire has had a lot of success with young riders from its program. You're with DSM now, of course, and they've been similarly successful when you look at riders like, you know, Mark Hershey and Anna Henderson. How did you make that shift? Why did DSM seem like the better opportunity for you?
It wasn't an easy choice because I had a really good relationship with everyone in Azure Desire, and I met the under 23 team as well. But I think in the end, it came down to DSM were a continental team, the development team. In that sense, I was getting to do all UCI races and probably at a higher level. If you also look at the past of DSM, or Sunweb at the time, the amount of riders that have come through the development team to the World Tour team, they have a really good track record. And I was, I had a lot of confidence in the team that they could also do that for me.
Are you based at their Keep Challenging Centre in the Netherlands? How does that setup work?
I live in Sittard in Limburg in the Netherlands most of the year. The team have like maybe 8 or 10 houses, and each house is split into 2 apartments. So I have my own apartment. There's about probably 5 or 6 development riders that kind of stay there most of the year. And then there's a few from the women's team as well. So there's always people to train with or go out with and do things.
You know, 10 years ago, a young British rider, particularly a Rainer-funded rider, because of course that's where they came in, would pretty much be forging their own career overseas, overcoming, you know, what would seem to be insurmountable odds, hard enough to be a professional cyclist, never mind having to find a house and source the local supermarket and all that kind of stuff. I mean, given the investment that professional teams make in athletes, the setup that DSM seems an absolute no-brainer. You know, that's the level of support that a young athlete would need if they're going to be successful. Just how valuable is it that you didn't have to get onto the Dutch equivalent of Rightmove and find an apartment and all that kind of stuff? How much has that helped you just to focus on being an athlete?
Yeah, I think I'm incredibly fortunate to have this situation. It's made everything so much easier. As you said, I don't have to think about where I'm going to stay or anything like that. The only thing I had to think about was training. It was the easiest possible way I could move abroad, I think.
Would you have experienced similar support with other teams, with Azure Desire, for example? Or is this unique to DSM?
No, I think most of the World Tour teams that have development teams, they have a similar setup. Yeah, I also saw the setup with Azure Desire and it was very similar. Yeah, I think most World Tour teams are making a big investment in development teams and young riders now.
And how does that affect you, Oscar? Is there increased pressure? Do you think, gosh, there's a lot of money being invested here in helping me to succeed? Or is it the opposite? Does it take away all that pressure from day-to-day living and just leave you free to focus on what they need you to do?
I've felt no pressure from the team, and I think that's the thing they're trying to push forward, is that in the development team, there's no pressure. We go to races to learn, and obviously we want to win, but the most important thing is our development. And if they see we're improving in a race, whether that's getting a top result or just, I don't know, positioning in the bunch or something, then yeah, that's the most important thing for the team.
You talked earlier about the fluency with which you can move between the World Tour team and the development team. What are the logistics of that? Do you identify professional races where you think you can make a difference, or does the team do that for you?
We don't get much of a say in it. We get given a calendar in the beginning of the year. It's got most of our races on for the year. Yeah, I think the team choose what races can suit us with development team and the World Tour team, and then we go from there. But I think being able to go up to the World Tour team is actually a really good thing. It narrows that gap to the World Tour. So then when you do make the step up, then yeah, if you stay in the same team, then nothing changes really. Yeah, it's just the same.
I mean, this is a big question, but what is the difference between top-level under 23 racing and professional racing? I guess it's narrower than ever. If you look at a field at a race like the Vallée d'Aosta, for example, you know, pretty much everyone in the top 10 is going to enjoy a professional career. But is it still very different?
In some ways, I would say under 23 racing's harder. There's not so much control. You can get some days where it's just full gas racing from the beginning to the end, whereas pro races always follows a similar pattern of break goes, and then you kind of ride in one long line for 3 or 4 hours, and then it's, yeah, probably the end is harder, more intense, but overall there's not so much difference between the two.
And is it hard to manage that transition? We mentioned your last two races of the season, the Crow race and then Paris-Tours Espoir. Is it a bit of a culture shock to find yourself back in that uncontrolled under 23 style of racing?
Yeah, it was a little bit. And I think with Paris Tours as well, with the gravel, it was quite a hectic race. And going from Croatia, where we had 230k days where you have so much time to do anything really, and then back to under 23 racing, it is a bit of a shock in the beginning. But then, yeah, in the final, then both finals of races are the same, just hectic and full gas.
And in terms of the team, you know, choosing the races, how did it feel when the Tour of Britain came up on your to-do list? You must have been delighted.
Yeah, I was really excited for that. Obviously, getting the chance to race on home roads in front of a lot of people I knew. And I heard in January that I was doing that. Yeah, it was something to look forward to for the whole year, really.
And did you get in any secret training on your local roads for that? I think it was stage two, wasn't it?
I was at home 1 week in June, so I managed to ride a bit of the course. But I knew all the roads anyway. The last 5 years I've been on those roads most days, so I knew them well.
Tell us about the social side. I mean, any young guy of 19 years old would expect to be out with his friends at the weekend and maybe even a couple of nights in the week as well. You've got to have a pretty focused lifestyle, pretty disciplined. How does that feel? Do you ever feel like you're missing out, or are you living the dream here?
Yeah, I think for me, it's never something I've really been interested in, so I find it quite easy. I think the equivalent to our nights out are going to cafes. So it's a little bit different, but it's also nice. And I think when there's a good group of us in Sittard, we can train and do things together, then yeah, I don't feel like I'm missing out on anything.
I was going to ask, what is life like in the Netherlands? Is it something that you've been able to adapt to quite quickly?
In a way, it's good and bad that everyone speaks English there, so it makes things easier, but it also means that I'm not learning the language. It's quite simple days, just training, a lot of cafes, and sometimes we'll find things to do in the afternoon, but it just depends on who's there and what training we all have.
I mean, you're at home at the moment. Is that an infrequent occurrence? Do you manage to get home whenever you like, or do you have to plan your visits back quite carefully?
If I wanted to, I could go home after most races. But for me, it was quite an important step to learn how to live by myself. I also just found it easier going back to Sittard after races. So I haven't spent so much time here this year. I think in total it's been about 4 weeks so far. Yeah, I have a bit more time now over the winter, some time off the bike. The first few weeks of training again, I'll stay at home.
It's funny, isn't it? October and November are the pro cyclist holiday. And one of the things on your to-do list will be the Dave Rayner Foundation dinner. Tell us about the Rayner Foundation and the role it's played in your career.
They're a really important factor, not only financially, but I think the profile they give young riders. Yeah, if you look on any social media, they're always posting about all these riders. Your name gets out there. I've had a lot of teammates asking me about the foundation from other countries, but they see it on, I don't know, Twitter or Instagram, and they just start asking me about it. I think it's a really good foundation that they have for young riders.
Is there a bond between Rayner Foundation riders at under 23 races? Do you guys bump into each other at various events?
Yeah, I see a lot of them at races. And yeah, just British riders in general, I see them. I kind of know most of them. So yeah, we're always talking at races whenever we're together.
I'm going to show my age here, but you know, it's amazing how quickly British riders have become the norm in the World Tour peloton in a way that, you know, they simply weren't 15 or 20 years ago. Does that come now with a certain cachet given the success of recent generations of British riders? Or are you feeling, I've got to prove myself here, you know, I've got a reputation to live up to?
I don't feel any pressure from it. And I feel like something that's just happened naturally. So riders before me have looked at riders before them, and you look up to the riders that have just turned World Tour or getting good results. And I think that, yeah, success breeds success in a way. And I think that's kind of what's happened with British cyclists.
You must be one of the more GC-focused riders of the new generation. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few GC riders coming up. I think, yeah, Leo Hayter, who won the Baby Giro, and Tom Glogue. Yeah, there's a few others as well. For me, it's something that I want to focus on in the future.
And what's your secret weapon? We've already talked about climbing, but, you know, you're a pretty useful time trialist too.
If the time trial suits me well, like the course, then I can do a good time trial. And it's something I want to focus more on in the future. And I think starting from time trials, then I know how to pace myself quite well. And also running. I think the races I did were kind of similar length, 20 to 30 minutes. Obviously, you're not using the same muscles, but like heart rate and the physical effort is quite similar. So I think that's kind of where it comes from.
Absolutely. I mean, what is your long-term goal, Oscar? Do you think that far ahead, or do you prefer to sort of measure intermediate steps along the road?
Yeah, I think up till very recently, I hadn't really thought of any long-term goals. But now I've had some meetings with the team and we're starting to talk a lot more long-term and focusing on these GC races and maybe in the future also focusing on Grand Tours. But I'm also still young and still developing, so I don't know where I'm going to go in the future. Yeah, maybe I'll be more suited to the shorter climbs or something different. I don't know yet.
Plenty still to discover.
Yeah.
Well, look, Oscar, thank you very much indeed for joining us today. I hope you have a wonderful Dave Rohner Foundation dinner, and I hope you have a wonderful 2023. Thank you very much again for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.